Hey everybody, welcome to the Banff Podcast, and I am Jason Pundro. I'm going to be your host for something a little bit new. And for those of you that have been with Banff for a while, or you might be new, I have been with the Banff Podcast for a long time now, sometimes hosting with Mike, sometimes coming on with a couple of other guests. But about a year and a half ago, I left my job as a college professor out on the Georgia coast. To join Paizo as an editor, which I have been doing for about the last year and a half, where I worked on pretty much everything Paizo puts out, whether it was the playtest that was actually being pushed out the door as I was hired for the playtest for second edition, or Starfinder or the Pathfinder second edition, all of our first edition Pathfinder stuff that we put out in the last year and a half, and everything else we do from cards to maps to pawns. Editors look at all of that stuff. But about a couple of months ago, like right before Gen Con of 2020, I was offered the opportunity to move over to the developer position at the Starfinder team, which we call the Star Chamber. And I took that gig. And so now I am developing adventures for the Starfinder line, hand in hand with Jason Keeley, who's been doing that since the game launched a couple of years ago now. So since I'm in the Paizo offices every day, and I have a lot of in the business perspectives that a lot of folks watching the show or listening to the podcast might be interested in, Mike and I threw around the idea of me maybe doing sort of a regular Starfinder show. And so that's why I'm here. And I've got access to a lot of people who work on the game, and we'll be bringing those people to you, telling stories about the game, about working in the Paizo offices, about all the other cool projects these people are working on. Starfinder's really captured a fan base in gaming. And there's a lot of really interesting reasons for that, some of which are related to the game system, but a lot of which are related to the setting. And we won, I think, an Annie for Origins Award for an Annie for the Packed World setting. And there's been a lot of really exciting embrace of the game, even when it was still just coming out. Like, we'll talk about a lot of this, sort of the unexpected success of Starfinder, as one of our future shows. But first, you know, maybe we should take a little bit of a broader look at that. We are going to have an interview today. I'm going to bring you an interview with Patrick Brennan. Brennan is the GM for the Cosmic Crit podcast, which is the longest running and most successful of the Starfinder podcasts. And there's a lot of them out there, and they are really great, actually. I listen to Non-Standard Action myself, but I'm going to put in a plug for Patrick's show, which is a big favorite around our offices. But Patrick is also, in addition to GMing this ongoing live play show, he also wrote The Fate of the Fifth, which is the first volume in the Attack of the Swarm adventure path, currently being released, currently on sale now at your favorite game and hobby store. So I wanted to chat with Patrick about that adventure, about anything that he could shed some light on, sort of behind the scenes about it, and his thoughts working on the project. So we'll get to that later on. It's a really interesting interview. But in the meantime, let's take a little step back and kind of talk about what Starfinder is and what makes it different and interesting for a game system. And also at the same time, maybe a little bit about what it isn't. And what's made the game so popular. Starfinder is a science fantasy RPG. It uses a D20 based system. It's got an open license in the back pages. So in some senses, it's OGL. But it does a lot that's different from a traditional D&D game, but a lot of it's the same. You still have the same six attributes, for example. You still roll a D20, you add an attack bonus, and you try to hit an armor class, although there might be a couple of different armor classes depending on whether you're using an energy weapon or a kinetic weapon like a fist or a sword or a gun. And when you first are describing the game, and I think this is how it was first pitched in the Paizo offices a year before anybody had ever heard of it outside. It was first pitched as sort of Pathfinder in space. And to some extent, that's true. That is, Starfinder is set in the same setting as Pathfinder, but it is set an indeterminate time in the future. So the world in which Pathfinder takes place, most of Pathfinder takes place, is Galarian. We didn't want at Paizo, obviously, we didn't want to create a future game which set the future events of Pathfinder. We didn't want to make decisions, for example, that might take power out of your table and your player characters and set some kind of definite future about what happens in the future of Galarian. We didn't want to just blow up the planet because, well, that would sort of make all of your PCs' exploits pointless, wouldn't it, if the planet just blew up anyway? But we did want to keep a lot of that lore in the setting because people liked it. I mean, Pathfinder has 10 years worth of continuity, and we don't want to use all of it, but that's what people associate with the game. We didn't want to compete against ourselves by creating a whole new setting. We have something that works pretty well. If it's not broke, don't fix it, right? So how can we keep the Pathfinder setting but still have the freedom to invent in our own new space? No pun intended. So the answer was a thing we call the gap. And the gap is basically some sort of cosmic event happened, right? And my background is in superhero comics, as those of you who listen to the podcast know. And so I think of this as sort of a Crisis on Infinite Earths kind of, you know, galactic level cosmic crisis. And what happens during this crisis, nobody knows. All memory of everything that happened during the gap and all historical records and even the ability to date something with science, like carbon dating or, you know, measuring the molecular decay or all that stuff that we use to determine, for example, how old the universe is. None of that shit works during this period known as the gap. There was history before the gap, and Galarian and Pathfinder and all that stuff all takes place before the gap. But then at some indeterminate time, and it's kind of fuzzy and it's different for different cultures and maybe even in different places, and sometimes you can get little glimpses of the gap pushing a little bit farther ahead into the timeline. Sometimes it falls farther back, depending on where you might be. The gap begins, and nobody knows anything about what happens or even how long the gap is. It's broadly stated in one of the core rulebook. I think it was thousands of years, we think, right? But nobody knows, and no one at Starfinder is ever officially going to tell you. Like, that's one of the mysteries of the setting that we intentionally don't answer, and we let tables figure out their own answers. The point is, we had to do it this way in order for us to have a new setting that didn't mess with the old setting, right? So then the gap ends, and that's, I think, about 400 years before the current year in Starfinder. And pretty soon after the gap ends, basically when the gap ends, everybody just kind of wakes up and they're like, we don't remember anything that just happened like yesterday, but I have a job and I have skills and I know who I am, but I don't remember anything previous to this. It's kind of, you know, and then 400 years pass. So unless you're a high elf, that probably isn't still going on. And now I say 400 years, and now I'm suddenly thinking that I'm wrong, so I have to check. Maybe it's only 200. This is the first moral of being a developer on Starfinder, on any game, is always check your book. Like, never allow your memory to think you know what's going on. Always check your book. Yeah, okay, 300. I split the difference. 317 after the gap is the current year in Starfinder. So unless you're a high elf and you live 400 years, you don't remember the gap. but you could have you would have ancestors that would. Anyway, so everybody kind of found themselves in whatever new situation the universe was in at the end of the gap. They're like, well, this is pretty freaky. But then everybody kind of, you know, moves, everybody lives their lives. They carry on. They live their new lives one day at a time. And they, maybe some societies might decide to rebuild their society from scratch because they don't remember anything about what was before. Some people might decide to kind of keep on going with what they were doing before the gap because they remember that. Or they have records of that, at least. They themselves don't remember it unless they're immortal. But there's all kinds of opportunities for all kinds of change or continuity, depending on whatever we want to do. And also, as a part of what happened in the gap, the actual planet of Galarian, where most of Pathfinder is set, is missing, is gone. And it's been replaced with this space station, which we call Absalom Station, named after the city of Absalom, the great, most important city on Galarian, in the heart of a lot of Pathfinder's Paizo adventures. So in that sense, yes, it's Pathfinder in space. One of the earliest books that came out for Pathfinder was called Distant Suns. It talked about all the different planets in the Galarian solar system and all the alien races that lived there, and the various cultures and all those planets. And, you know, this stuff got tapped once in a while by occasional adventure writers or scenarios and stuff. But a lot of it just never really got developed very much. But since that's all the rest of the Pact world, the rest of the solar system, we were given that, and we had to use it, although we did have the opportunity to develop it and change a lot of it, especially when we wanted to maybe approach some of these planets in a more sophisticated manner. For example, the planet of Castrovel in the original Distant Suns was kind of a Venus, Pellucidar, Barsoomian kind of setting where you have like this sort of jungle swamp planet and all the women are gorgeous and all the men are hunks. And you know, the women all ride around topless on these giant lizards and stuff. Like, okay, now I get what you're doing when you do that. You're doing sort of a pulp Edgar Rice Burroughs kind of send up. And I told Lost Worlds plan. I get it. That Lost Worlds adventure, Lost Worlds romance. But this is 2019, and I think we could come up with some stuff a little bit more sophisticated there. We don't want to. I guarantee there aren't too many. There are a lot of women players who would not be interested in playing on that planet and would see it as, you know, pretty insulting, right? So that species, the Lashunta, in which all the women were tall, willowy, and gorgeous, and all the men were short, stocky, and not so smart. That kind of became an example of a challenge, a challenge to the creative team on Starfinder to how can we make that more interesting and make it present it in a way that's not so blatantly kind of, in that case, kind of misogynistic and a little regressive. And that's just one example. Like, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that we thought, well, that was cool. You know, I mean, like, I knew why we were doing that. That was neat. But can we do something that's maybe more interesting and more welcoming and creates a very diverse player base? And this has become the real secret sauce to Starfinder. In some senses, like I've been talking about, it's Pathfinder in space. But in many senses, it's not. In fact, around the Star Chamber, we specifically make a conscious effort to avoid overusing Pathfinder tropes and instead use our own toys, our own cool stuff that we've invented for Starfinder. As an example, in the back of the Starfinder book, you'll see rules for converting all the old, what we call legacy races, dwarves, elves, half-orcs, all the halflings, gnomes, how to make those characters in Starfinder. But in the Starfinder setting, I'm not saying we never use them, but we tend not to use them. We have all of these other interesting and unique Starfinder species that we've created for Starfinder. There are now over 100 playable species in Starfinder. And for a game that's only been out like a couple of years, that's really unusual. Like when a game has that, when a game has 100 playable species in 2 years, they're doing it on purpose, right? That's not just an accident of development. Oh, look, we just have, look at all these species we have. No, like we're doing that on purpose. Why are we doing this? When Starfinder was just starting to come out, it really got seized upon by the fan community for its diverse racial species mix-up. When they were working on this, and I say we, but I wasn't actually part of the team at this point. When we were devising this, we were calling it the Cantina feel. And is that after that moment, that iconic moment in Star Wars, when Luke goes into the Cantina for the very first time, the Mos Eisley Cantina, and there's all these crazy aliens around, and you don't know who they all are, but you just know they all have a story, right? And then of course we got books which gave every single one of those characters a story, no matter how short their appearance was, right? And they all got plastic miniatures and figures and stuff, but. But that's kind of our approach. Like, let's have a galaxy where humans are not the majority. Like, they're just one of countless species, not even the most important, just kind of one among many. And this notion of humanity not being privileged, of humanity kind of just being in this giant melting pot of species where, and all these species are incredibly varied and different. Like there's coral people and walrus people and, you know, crazy like jellyfish folk that float around and all living starfish that can shape change and all kinds of crazy creatures. Some of my favorites are in the core rule book, but there's literally 100 more that are out there. And what this did is it created a sandbox in which players, no matter what their background, whether ethnicity or their sexual orientation or their religion or their, you know, what or lack of, whatever their gender or identification, they could find a character, they could make a character that they could identify with. Like they could see themselves in the game. This caught fire with the fans. And now we have a huge fan base of like non-straight white dudes that are playing Starfinder, and it's fantastic. Like it's really cool, and we make a very conscious effort in our writing team to hire folks that are diverse and that where so that our writer base, our creative team, represents the player base, right? Well, so. And I'm not saying that, you know, other games don't do that too, but in my opinion, as just one person on the team, I really think this is one of the things that has really made Starfinder stand out. Now that, in addition to the fact that it's a science fantasy. Now, there are other science fiction games out there. Remember, Starfinder's came out a couple of years ago. So a couple of the other science fiction or science fantasy games, maybe even ones that use D20 engine, came out since Starfinder. Like to use just one example, see if I can find it on my bookshelf here behind me. Esper Genesis, for example, which I picked up at Gen Con a year ago. Esper Genesis is also science fiction using the D20 system. And in fact, it's using the 5e system. It's D&D 5e in space. But it's a very high-tech super, so that science is so advanced that it's basically like magic. Our game isn't like that. Our game has technomancers and mystics and witch warpers. It has people who cast spells, but it also has starships, robots, and laser guns. It's got a class, for example, the Solarians, which were intentionally designed to do all of the game mechanical things that Jedi do. Energy sword, telekinesis, mind reading, but to do them in a way that was not like Star Wars and that was distinctive to Starfinder, the Solarian class. And it's got kind of a light side and a dark side, except that our versions isn't alignment oriented. Like you draw your power from supernovas or you draw your power from black holes. but that doesn't make you good or evil. You can decide, you know, it's not your abilities that define you. It's how you choose to use them. So there's plenty of science, and the players, for example, are assumed to have a starship, and they're presumed to be crews of that starship, and they, you know, travel from planet to planet, and they have a hyper jump drive, except we don't call it that. We call it the drift. And we have all kinds of other, you know, specific stuff in science fiction stuff in the setting, but we also have magic, and all the gods, well, I shouldn't say all of them, but many of the gods from Pathfinder are still around, along with some new ones. And a lot of the cosmology at Pathfinder is still in place. So, you know, Phirasma is still out there somewhere doing her thing in the same place she's always done it. And the elemental planes are still there, and the astral plane, and all that stuff is still there. So, and you still have outsiders and demons and devils, and the cosmology is still there, but it's also got a science fiction feel. And it's different than the old D&D classic Spelljammer, in that we specifically did not want to do flying through space in your magic longboat or flying galleon or whatever. You have starships. We made a point that our faster than light travel, the drift engine, is a technological device. It is not magic. It doesn't work on magic. And so your starships might have a little bit of magic in them, but they're still starships. They're not, you know, you're not riding a magic carpet to the sun, for example. Not that there's anything wrong with that. That's just not our game. Okay. So in future episodes of the Starfinder, my hoping is to do this maybe about once a month. We'll talk about how the game was initially pitched and written and developed. I'll get some help with that because I wasn't around in the offices for that time, but I know all the people that were. So we'll bring a couple of them in to talk on the show. We'll talk about this, the unique appeal of diversity and how diversity appears in the game and how it's gotten such a strong fan reaction. And we'll look at some examples of that. We'll talk about the development process. How do adventures get made from the inside? And a lot of folks out there often are interested in writing for Paizo and writing for Starfinder. Good. Like, I want to encourage you to do that because we need all the contributors we can get. Paizo puts out an enormous amount of adventure material every year, and there's a vigorous third-party market for Starfinder stuff, including Rogue Genius Games and plenty of others. There's all kinds of third-party settings that have come out. Very exciting horror-based, for example, settings for, is it called Grimmer Space, I believe, is one of them. But I'm talking off the top of my head now, and I should wait till I have notes. But there's a very exciting third-party support structure for Starfinder, and you don't need anybody in the world to publish that stuff. You can totally do it on your own, following some basic guidelines from Paizo and the Open Gaming License. If you want to write for Paizo, that's great, but you don't need to. You can write for any one of these other third-party companies, or you can write for yourself and publish it on your own. And so I'd like to take a little bit of time in future episodes to maybe talk about what we look for as writers, as developers in the game. What is the developer's job compared to the writer? How does an adventure path, the 6-chapter adventure paths that are the spine of Starfinder, how do those get created and outlined and written and developed and laid out and all that stuff? What's the process of making an adventure path? This is on my mind a lot because I literally just pitched mine. I'd been on the job for about 4 weeks when Rob McCreary, the creative director at Starfinder, came to me and said, well, let's meet in a couple of days to talk about your first adventure path. Now, Paizo works a year in advance. So the stuff that I'm talking about now will not come out until like November of 2020. It's a long ways away. And I had never even been in an adventure path meeting before, let alone pitching my own ideas for what the adventure path should be. So we'll bring on some other folks to help talk about that, so you won't have to listen to just me all the time. And also, one last thing. We have sort of a I'd love your input on something. I need a name. We need a name for this regular show. Maybe about once a month, we'll sit down, talk some Starfinder, bring a guest on. And if I have strong opinions about something in the gaming industry or if I can answer questions from y'all, I would love to do that. So I need a name. What should the name of this show be? Please add a comment to the video and give me your thoughts. Because I would also, if you have questions about Paizo or Starfinder or the RPG business in general, hit me up there. Or on my Twitter feed, which is at Dr. Comics. And I will totally take those questions here to the show. And if I can, I will mention you if you allow me. And we'll get your question asked and answered on the show. Okay? All right. Well, so that's all. That's it for me for today. But I'm going to pass it off to my interview with Patrick Brennan, host of the Cosmic Crit podcast. An author of Fate of the Fifth, The Attack of the Swarm Adventure Path. And as a very brief introduction, Attack of the Swarm is a 6-chapter adventure path, one book every month, with a very Starship Troopers kind of aliens feel, where one of the big campaign antagonists in the Starfinder universe, the Swarm, which is sort of basically the Zerg, they're like a insectoid hive mind species that takes a planet and they just consume all of its resources, then move on to the next planet. They are conquering all the worlds in this new star system, the Suskalon system. And the player characters are soldiers in a military unit defending Suskalon from the Swarm. And of course, in that campaign, and in this case, it's literally a military campaign against the Swarm, you also learn all these great secrets and you have a chance to learn more about the Swarm and maybe do more to oppose them than simply an organized retreat. Okay. All right. Thanks, everybody. And give me your title suggestions and questions or comments below at Dr. Comics on Twitter. Thanks.